Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we'll get to the Colts in a second. We got a nice long segment here, so we'll get to the Colts in just a second. The question that Seth asked the audience out there is, how far out do you go where you from Houston, in the Houston area, where you still consider yourself a Houstonian? You still say you're from Houston, right?
Right. Like, even like, and especially obviously if you're talking to somebody else from Houston, you're going to be more specific. But like, let's say you're traveling and somebody asks, where are you from? Do you say outside Houston or do you say I'm from Houston?
Yeah. Here we got a few texts. First, shout out to anybody who's up this morning, especially if you've stayed up all night. Shout out to you. From Katie, don't want to admit I'm a Houstonian, but yeah, Houstonian. There aren't any K-Town hats.
Yeah, that's okay. That's a good point. The sports teams pull you. They pull you in a little closer.
Sir,
yeah.
Or ma'am, it sounds like you've identified at least some sort of business opportunity out there.
Yeah,
a little K-Town action out
K-Town.
There. K-Town. Yeah, man.
K-Town. The high school shirt. I like wearing a good high school shirt. There's the T-shirt. That's one thing that people overlook sometimes is the golden age of T-shirts
we
live in.
Yes.
Where so many different people on the web can print up like anything that you want in the world.
I'm a sucker for all of them, dude. If they show up on my Instagram feed, I'm clicking and I don't care who I'm buying. I don't even know who I'm buying them from. I'm like, I must have that T-shirt.
I've always wondered about Magnolia. Because it feels like, I mean, if, you know, Jimmy Butler will say, will insist I'm not a Houstonian, I'm a Tombaulian. I feel like, so I've always kind of put Tomball as the place that you get out there and it feels a lot more like suburbs than it used to, but it just still feels different. But then you get way out to Magnolia. I would say, are people from Magnolia saying I'm a Houstonian? I would imagine no.
It's a good question. Back in the day, I don't think they would have, and I say this because my ex-wife and I bought land in Magnolia back in the late 90s.
Smart move. You held on to it, right?
So anyways, we were going to move.
I knew you had to hold on to it.
I wouldn't be sitting here making wiener jokes with you if I had sold it. But back then, like, we viewed Magnolia as like, oh, we're going to get out of the big city. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, and now you drive up there and it's really just a continuation of Tomball is all it is. Like, there's no... other than the sign that says "Welcome to Magnolia," you wouldn't know you were leaving civilization. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to ask. I think Steve McKinney's in Magnolia. I don't know. I've never driven the hell up there for him. Steve comes to me.
That's right.
But I'll ask him if he considers himself a Houstonian. Now Steve is a smart business person, and I'm guessing he's I'm a Houstonian. Yeah.
What you're saying is he would have held on to the land.
Steve totally would have held on. Yeah.
I'm like, I got to get out of this payment.
Well, I told you, like Gary Walker, when we first got here, Gary bought land in Rocheron,
yeah.
And he was, Gary's a farm kid, and I think just looked at it as he got like 100 acres and just he could go, boar hunting and do all that stuff and camp out. We used to have like cookouts on Friday nights down there.
That's fun.
But he held on to it for a long time, I think. And I'm guessing he did pretty well.
Probably.
Because it was 100 acres, probably smack dab in the middle of a bunch of future housing.
Oh, good for him. Good for him. Text message, I live in Huffman and I say I live outside of Houston. Text message, I live in Lake Jackson. I just say outside of Houston when I'm out of town. Yeah. So I mean, and those are pretty far. Those are pretty far out. I live in Lufkin, but I'm a native Houstonian. I'm so happy for the Odyssey app so I can hear you guys everywhere. I got Payne and Pendergast, the best team out there. That's not even somebody answering the question. That's just somebody giving us love. So I'm going to read that all day, every day right there.
I'm looking at the little satellite. It's almost like the electrons that fly around the nucleus of Houston. I know that's not how it works, but whatever. I feel like the Woodlands is its own city, and yet we still feel like that's part of Houston.
Yeah.
Let's stop looking at it from other people's perspective. Let's look at it from our perspective.
Yeah.
I think of the Woodlands as Houston.
Sorry,
I think of
Woodlands. You're part of us.
Rosenberg. Rosenberg might be the furthest flung, and then like League City. I like Dickinson.
Yeah.
Those are pretty far flung, and yet I feel like, yeah, that's Houston. Whereas Sealy, if we're going out on I-10, I feel like Sealy is Sealy.
Yeah.
And Sealy is out there, and I'm sure it's become more suburban than it used to be, but I don't look at that as Houston per se.
The only thing I would say about League City and down that direction is those are really close to the shore, you know, to water, and so they feel maybe a little more detached from the big concrete jungle that is Houston, you know?
Well, the thing that makes it super weird is the fact that, like, Clear Lake is actually part of the city of Houston.
Yeah.
And, like, all those... used to not even be physically attached to it, but then I think they incorporated Pearland or something. There's like a little peninsula of the city limits that extends down to NASA.
We're so out over our skis right now.
So it feels like there's a little like Florida Peninsula like type of action with Clear Lake.
Yeah,
I mean Clear Lake is technically Houston.
Yes, yeah.
That's not even like no feel about it or anything. They're actually somehow weirdly a city, the part of the city of Houston.
All right, keep texting in 713-572-4610. The Texans, we're going to...
Am I thinking of Friendswood? I don't have a clue.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
This game against the Titans, we're going to dig into the game against the Titans as the week rolls on. We'll have a little more clarity, hopefully, over the next day or two as to exactly how we think the Texans handle this thing. In the meantime, you know, the Texans have clinched the four seed now. Well, they clinched the four seed last weekend, but they've been in the playoffs and won the division for the better part of 2.5 weeks now. And yet, oddly enough, the mood around the team is as low as it's been in a long, long time, based largely on the ineptitude of the offense. But the good thing is, the silver lining in all this is if you're somebody who just like, okay, hey, at least we're in the playoffs, we're in the dance. If the Indianapolis Colts are considered the best competition to the Houston Texans in the division, then the Texans might be division champs for a long, long time. It is unraveling in Indianapolis after that loss to the Giants on Sunday. And again, if they won that game, the Colts, they would still be mathematically in it. They wouldn't be in the playoffs, but they would still be mathematically alive. That eliminated them. That's as embarrassing as it gets. A Giants team that is the worst team offensively in football, they're the worst across many different metrics, scored 40-something points on you, and Drew Lock had an historic day. Drew Lock had a day that when you go, the only quarterbacks to do this, 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 and this in the same game are guys like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes.
Well, this is what I was hopeful for, and I think it might be coming to fruition, is that Shane Steichen might be a really good quarterbacks coach and offensive coordinator, but not quite a head coach, because there's so many things about that team in which I like to not venture too much into the gossipy side of things. There's always some kind of smoke or something weird, or like the Anthony Richards saga is all just a bunch of strange stuff that it seems dysfunctional. The stories about the owner and the way he operates, it just seems like a dysfunctional mess. And it seems like Shane Steichen doesn't necessarily have control over either his young quarterback, his podcasting, linebackers, everything. So I hope they stick with both Anthony Richardson and Shane Steichen for at least 3 more years.
Yeah.
Give it a good run.
Yes. Because
I don't think either of those guys are going to make it.
I don't either. And the word is they're rolling with Richardson next year. Like, he's their guy for another year, which is awesome. Now, the thing that has really highlighted this over the last few days is they've basically alienated their loudest voice that they've had out there. You know, like Pat McAfee, who has as big a platform as anybody in the broadcasting business, put out a long tweet about all the red flags in the organization. And apparently there's people in the organization and in Indianapolis, just at large, fans that are angry with McAfee when he's critical of the Indianapolis Colts. They view him as some sort of Judas or a traitor. And he put out a long, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the parts that really pop with this is where he says, a blind person could see the red flags on this team. Work ethic questions, never happens on good teams. Preparation commitment questions, never happens on good teams. Late to meetings, never happens on good teams. Late to skipping treatment, never happens on good teams. The franchise quarterback tapping out of a game on third down in the red zone because he was tired, never happened in the history of the NFL.
Yes, that is 100%
true. It's a good list.
To answer, somebody always asks this question about Anthony Richardson tapping out. They'll say, hey, other position players do it all the time. Right. It's accepted with those other, especially like defensive line. It's kind of like hockey. Like guys need to blow every now and then. It's very physically taxing. Anthony Richardson had scrambled to run for zero yardage and he was too tired after that. And quarterbacks, the quarterbacks are theoretically the leader of the offense. They don't leave the field unless there's a package that you're going to use or whatever it might be. But especially when it's third and goal in a game in which you're trailing. That's the part that I don't think the national media even did a good enough job of pointing that out. People are like, well, all right, well, what if he was actually dinged up a little bit or something? Like, no, he himself said he was tired, and it was third and goal when they were down by a touchdown. It was the strangest thing anybody's ever seen. By the way, I did appreciate that he said he was late to skipping treatment. I don't know how exactly that works. Like at some point you just missed treatment completely. You weren't late to skipping.
He had a slash in between the two of them.
Oh, late,
said,
slash,
late to
skipping.
Slash
okay.
Skipping treatment. Yeah. Late to slash skipping treatment.
No, it's late slash skipping.
Okay.
You said late to skipping.
Yeah, I misread it. Here was J.J. Watt yesterday on the McAfee show. J.J.
You might as well be Anthony Richardson. That's
I am.
How slipshod
I'm
your
tap, you want me to tap out
morning.
Of this segment? You want me to tap out and leave?
Yeah.
J.J. Watt was on the Mac. J.J. could not wait to talk about this. When McAfee tweeted that whole thing out, J.J.'s like, oh, I wish it were Wednesday. I guess he comes on every Wednesday. He came on a day early to talk about this because he was on yesterday on McAfee, I believe. And here was J.J. Watt reacting to McAfee's long list of grievances with the Indianapolis Colts.
I hear you. No, you supported him for a long time. You did. Like, I through tough times, you supported him for a long time. And then you said, no, I support them. I will support them. And then they didn't do it. So here we are, which I don't think anybody's really disagreeing with what you're saying. I think there's obviously, like, when you just look at the stats and you look at the reality of the situation, it is what it is. On paper, you literally can look at it and see this has not worked out. Whatever you have tried, whatever it has been, it simply has not worked. So you have to find a different path. If you're an organization like the Indianapolis Colts, who has obviously been a great organization, who is in this division, who this division has been bouncing a little bit all over the place, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's been considered one of the toughest divisions in football over time.
No.
And you haven't won it when everybody else has won it twice. And there's a couple teams in there, or at least one team in there, that's had the number one draft pick multiple times in that same time span. And they found a way to win it twice, at least. Like, you have to do something different. And I'm very curious and very excited to see what happens in this offseason, because I also imagine there's probably some people pushing back, being like, okay, well, we also don't want to just give in and seem like Pat McAfee is running this entire show. But you've said a lot of things that a lot of people need to hear.
Yeah. And the McAfee thing, like, he's got a powerful voice, man. Like, they're hearing it in the building over there.
They're hearing it, and I think that the funny thing is, as JJ's saying all that, I think you could say a lot about the Texans offense and the way things have gone this year. There's just, at some point, there needs to be something changed or fixed. It's not a matter. The injuries are only a partial explanation for why it's gotten as bad as it's gotten. But another, I would keep hearing people all year long talk about the injuries on the offensive line, and it was like no, there haven't been. It was like this was largely a relatively, until as of late, like a relatively healthy offensive line. They systemically need change. The one thing about that whole exchange yesterday when JJ was on, Pat McAfee was ranting at one point, and this wasn't really good for radio, but it was a hilarious visual. McAfee makes mention of, they gave an award to the mascot that's supposed to go to a player. And simultaneously, even these guys, they're both in different spots. You could tell J.J. Watt and A.J. Hawk didn't understand what McAfee was talking about. And they, like, simultaneous gave that confused puppy dog look.
I was confused, too.
Yeah. So, okay, this is... This is where I can't trust McAfee, though, unless maybe I saw it out of context. I feel like that was overblown. There's a salute to service award, which you give to somebody in the organization for work that they've done, you know, supporting the military.
Yeah.
So I think it was easy headline porn that the Colts gave it to the mascot, but they gave it to the guy, earmuffs, everybody. So they gave it to the guy who works very, very closely with the mascot. He might almost, you can almost say theoretically he's inside the mascot. So they gave it to that guy that works with the mascot, kids. And like the guy's, yeah, he's traveled all over the world, like been in, you know, multiple places. He does a boatload for the military.
Sure.
So that part of it, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But I feel like McAfee, if McAfee's using that as part of his argument, like, all right, dude, like let's not just throw everything into a big bucket.
Yeah, weakens,
that
weakens,
sounds like, yeah, that was a deserved award for that guy.
Yeah, it weakens your argument for sure. But when you talk about having to answer for it, Shane Steichen, in his very next press conference after McAfee started talking about all the professionalism, and keep in mind, this is the team in the AFC South that is the closest to the Houston Texans right now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Don't get complacent, Texans, just because the other three teams in your division are janky-ass ratchet organizations. Here was Shane Steichen having to answer the question, this is a great cut, about the allegations of tardiness to meetings inside the building.
Yeah, Shane, I don't know if you saw Pat McAfee's postgame tweet or if you were made aware of it, but he talked about players showing up late for treatment, for meetings. He wondered about the accountability. Is that true? Buck suggested that it was an issue at times throughout the season.
Yeah, I think with any team, right, not everyone's going to be on time every time, but there is accountability and guys are held to a standard. And that is talked about in-house.
Okay. Buck, by the way, is DeForest Buckner, who, yeah, in his press availability, he admitted, like, yeah, there's been professionalism issues in the building.
Yeah, that's I remember talking to people about, you'll never guess which team, but the Jets. being on the Jets at various times where, like, it was just guys were kind of just treating it like their own personal office. You know, and especially when your veteran players start doing that, like just kind of rolling in whenever they get to the building and everything, which is so far and foreign from anything I was ever involved with in any of my, like I played for three different head coaches and they were all really competent coaches. It was Gary Kubiak, Dom Capers, and Tom Coughlin. Very, very professional, very competent. And it was a big deal if you were late. It sucked. They got, like it's a hefty fine. I don't know how much it is these days, but I don't care how rich you are. You know that several hundred dollars is a lot of money to be paying just because you couldn't get to a meeting on time.
Yep.
And it's as simple as that. So that's where I wonder if Shane Steichen's got an issue with serial tardiness, that, man, that's day one of the meetings at training camp and everything else is like, yeah, respect everybody else's time, be a professional, be on time.
The guy who's probably going to get chopped over this, it would appear, is General Manager Chris Ballard, who, when he first got to Indianapolis, he got a lot of love, man, for his talent evaluation. And they've got good players on the team. Like, I don't think he's done a terrible job assembling talent. They've had quarterback issues, obviously. They've had a different quarterback start every year, it feels like, every time, for every year he's been there. That's not even an exaggeration. That's practically the truth. He's had three different head coaches, 12 starting quarterbacks. This is Ballard, under Ballard's watch. Different week one starting quarterback every year from 2017 to 2023. They've got a sub-500 record. They've never won a division championship. And in that same time frame, the Jags, the Titans, and the Texans have all won at least two. Texans have won four. Jags have won two. And the Tennessee Titans have won two. They've been to the playoffs twice in 8 years. They've got one playoff win. Unfortunately, that was here at NRG Stadium in 2018. That sucks. That the only thing keeping Ballard from having a winless playoff ledger is the 2018 Houston Texans. They've had multiple big games and big leads. They've choked throughout Ballard's tenure there. So the thought is that they're not going to fire Steichen. There's even rumors that I saw that I think it was Albert Breer yesterday. I saw a video with Albert Breer where he's talking about they may let Steichen help pick his GM.
Yeah,
Ballard's in trouble. I think it's, you know, it's just one of those things. Like, it may have run its course.
It gets to be one of those times, and it is. It's why the quarterback position is just such a career killer, or just it's a kingmaker, depending on how you handle it. And the tough thing is that with Ballard, he's done a really good job putting competitive rosters together. He's just had a really hard time replacing Andrew Luck, obviously. And in that time period, though, it's become very, very clear that the old days of just having to draft a quarterback in the first round, except for the rare circumstance where it wasn't a first round, that's kind of been blown out of the water. And people have done more by trading for a Tom Brady or winning a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback, like all these different things. And he just hasn't been able to get it done. So ultimately, yeah, you got to move on, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm happy if Ballard gets fired from a Texans perspective, because I think the chances of them finding as good a GM are less than 50%.
Yeah.
I think he's better than your average GM. But then likewise, I hope that they keep Shane Steichen and Anthony Richardson as long as possible.
I'm with you on
I think Shane Steichen's probably a really good offensive coordinator who's just not cut out to be a head coach.
Yep. You mentioned the podcasting linebackers. As long as we're just going to sit here and crane kick the hell out of the Indianapolis Colts, the closest team to the Texans in the AFC South. This was Zaire Franklin and EJ Speed on their, what is it, In the Trenches podcast?
That's right.
Yeah.
They tried to steal Andy and Greg Cook's,
name from their show on 790. Yeah. So here they are. This is the week after. The week after the Colts beat the Titans with Mason Rudolph playing quarterback for the Titans. Here was Zaire Franklin clowning the Tennessee Titans.
Shout out to Mason Rudolph. Actually, not shout out to you because I was open a couple times. But, you know.
Whatever.
Shout out to Tennessee. Don't let the door hit you with a good little split you. We swept them up. That's a positive.
Okay, so then the reason he was saying I was open too, Mason Rudolph threw three picks in that game. So he's like, where's my pick? Pretty funny. Jeffrey Simmons, defensive tackle for the Tennessee Titans, after the Colts lost to the Giants, found this bit of video and retweeted and said, don't let the plane door close on you, my dog. See you in Cabo. Basically saying you're with us now, that you like, got knocked out of the playoffs.
Welcome to our crappy club, but also that, we swept. So the Colts swept
the Titans.
The Titans have a chance to sweep the Texans.
Yes.
That would be and it's not, there's a very good chance the Texans only play the starters the first quarter, what have you. That's going to bother me. Even though that's not a real victory if the Titans win, it's going to bother me almost as much as if the Texans had played their starters the entire game in this meaningless game.
Yeah.
If the Texans lose this game, it's going to bother me that the Titans swept the Texans. Because I feel like it's going to be so indicative of everything that's just not quite right.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I like it. I think there's something about finishing 10-7 instead of 9-8 that looks better. Yeah. You know, double-digit wins. And, Seth, you know that I'm all about this AFC South road winning streak that's going on right now.
That's right. Oh, that's right.
It's up
that's
to
right.
10. This is why I live. It's why I exist.
Statistically very improbable, right? Are we up into the 1 in a million chance by now or
honestly,
so?
Honestly, we're getting close. If we're not there yet, I'll figure it out. I had done the math when it was at 8, and it was getting up there. Yeah. Yeah. For those who don't know, the Texans have won 10 straight road games in the division going back to the David Culley season. Back to 2021.
Okay, so we have an answer from the Montgomery section of town.
Okay.
An authoritative voice, original Texan Steve McKinney. I texted him. First I asked, like, hey, you live in Magnolia, right? He's like, no, Seth, I've told you 27 times, Montgomery. All right, it starts with an M and it's up there. He didn't answer me that way. So I said, do y'all call yourselves Houstonians in Montgomery/Magnolia? And Steve says, Houstonians, yes. I'm from Houston. And then if somebody said, oh, yeah, which part? And then he would say Montgomery.
Okay.
So, yeah. So he calls himself, I'm from Houston. I'm a Houstonian.
That directly maps Montgomery. To how you wanted this answered, too, which is like, yeah, like he calls himself A Houstonian.
If you're like, so we're just curious. Like, I wondered, but like, so we have we heard any from? I don't care.
I've got a few. I've got a few here. This is an important question, Seth.
Okay.
Ocho says if your high school football team plays the majority of its games in the Houston area, you're part of Houston.
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah, if your league
yeah.
is right around in that thick of the suburbs and everything, you're a Houstonian.
Someone yeah. says, I think Houston is a lot more north and south direction than east and west direction.
It has more, it's more inclusive north and south?
Yeah. Like
east and west?
I'll just read it verbatim and you can interpret it however you want to. I think Houston is a lot more north and south than east or west.
That's interesting.
You know who would be a good person to ask? Clint. You know, what is Baytown? Like, is he?
That's true. Well, I tell you, east, it feels like it gets cut off east of Houston.
To the texter's point, partially.
Yeah. It does feel like it becomes very much like, I don't know, LaPorte's off in its own world.
Channel View, Baytown. Yeah.
Well, and part of that, maybe it's because Beaumont's got its own flavor. Like, as soon as you get east, you start getting, it gets like more and more Cajun or just more feels like Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I think like the climate and the topography and everything just feels like Gulf Coast. And so that does make sense. Whereas you go out west, the way Houston has grown, it's just like more of the same.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, oh, okay. Yeah, here's some more subdivisions. Here's some more strip malls. Here's this, here's that. So it just feels like an extension of the city of Houston where you get into a whole different vibe when you go east.
Wherever the traffic starts, then you can consider yourself a Houstonian. That's a good point. It's a great answer. Yeah, it's a great answer. Santa Fe guy here again. I always say Houston, Galveston area. Okay, well, that's a long answer. You just got to, just one word answers, man.
That's what the media ratings people would tell you.
That is true.
When I'm in Galveston, I don't feel like I'm in Houston.
Yeah.
Galveston is specifically not Houston. And yet, Texas City feels very Houston.
Yeah. Yeah. It's strange.
You go across the channel there, and it's a different world.
Galveston definitely feels like Louisiana, for sure. For sure.
But I think that the north-south part of it is true. Like, almost from, like, Lake Jackson all the way up to Willis, that almost feels like that could be just considered Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time west of Katy, and maybe that's just because I'm an old-timer now. Like, when Brandy and I were first exploring Houston, it was like, where the hell are we anyway? Yeah. We're all the way out in Katy. Oh, looks like they got a mall here.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn around and drive through some pastures to get back to Houston.
Ain't that way anymore,
to
man.
Where now. So I don't know about west, like Sealy and everything. I haven't been out there in forever. I'll have to go on some reconnaissance. It's a good point about, so like east, you've got the bay there, which also, it's like a geographic thing. And then after as you're getting past the bay, you're like, oh, this is more Beaumont than Houston.
Definitely. I grew up in Pasadena, but always called myself a Houstonian. Yeah, Pasadena is kind of on that east, kind of like on that east border of what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
How much does the emotional part of not wanting to get swept by the Titans factor into practicality for you this weekend?
Nothing. Zero. Like, zero? You have to detach yourself from it. Like, yeah, I don't. D'Amico yesterday. You know what? I made a montage. I'll have to send it during the break because I didn't initially believe D'Amico that everybody was going to play, but he was asked or he talked about it four times in his press conference.
Yeah.
And I made a montage of him like making the point that this team needs to get some confidence. This team needs to feel what it's like to play well and all of that stuff. I think he really believes it. My thing is like, yeah, feeling nice is swell. But the biggest thing you can do to improve at this point after 17 weeks of football is get as healthy as possible. Like if those guys want to play good football, then go out and do it next week. Like you're not, because the downside of it is like, okay, go out and play a quarter and you want to play your starters a quarter. The Titans kicked your ass last time you played them. It's no guarantee that you're going to feel great after that first quarter of football.
True. Yeah.
So just get healthy.
True. Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if that Ravens game had been competitive, would that be impacting how he handled? And by the way, we have no clue ultimately what it's going to look like on Sunday. We're guessing right now based on four quotes from a press conference as to how he's going to handle this whole thing. But if they end up playing, you know, the starters end up playing a half or they play into the second half, would he have done that if the final score was 31-28, not 31-2? You know?
I think this is right. If it wasn't such an ugly loss
the
week before, right? Yeah, it's. I think that part of it too is that there's something about when you go into a regular season game treating it like a preseason game. This is not based on anything scientific at all, but this is the way I always felt as a player. I just always kind of felt like I felt like you're asking for injuries because you're going to have guys out there who aren't necessarily checked in all the way, especially your veteran players. As hard as they try and everything, it's also at the end of the season. They know they're only going to play a quarter. It feels like a preseason game. And if anything, I feel like you don't necessarily get the best performance out of those guys. So everything you're looking for, like, hey, let's look sharp, let's get out there and just stay. I feel like it's a lost cause. If you've made the decision to rest guys, go all the way with it. You know, you don't need to just. I almost made a bad analogy. Kids are home from school.
Well, the kids are home from school. They're not listening. So if you.
They could be. They could be. Their parents could be watching on YouTube or whatever.
That
so
is
I'll,
true.
I'll save it for
that
another
is true.
Day.
Okay, look at you. Look at you in 2025. 2 hours.
That's
in.
Not even a resolution to hey. Stop offending people in their homes.
Hey, by the way, I watched Casario's hit with John and Mark last night on YouTube. We're going to play a little bit of that in the next segment. I was right. Like, he kind of poo-pooed New Year's resolutions. I'm like, yeah, I nailed it. I figured yesterday. I'm like, among the people least likely to incorporate New Year's resolutions is someone like Nick Caserio, who probably the minute he finds something that makes himself a more productive person, does not wait for January 1st to incorporate it.
Yeah, no, I always like. I think he's kind of wired like a lot of our listeners are, like the people that are just wired for just kind of setting a routine and, you know, having habits and checklists and everything else like that. That just seems like how he's wired. So it probably feels like, and also given, especially because he's an American football coach and personnel person, it'll feel like the old, like, well, if it was important, if it's so important, why didn't you start on it 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, wait until January 1st to start thinking about your future.
Yep. Yep. Okay, I'm going to read this.
I, however, will have 7 New Year's resolutions.
No, I've already.
There's strength in numbers.
I'm working on some as we speak.
A chance I'll get at least one of them.
Okay, how do you interpret this text? I'm going to read it verbatim.
Yeah.
In prison, comma, the outskirts of Houston ain't Houston. Is this somebody texting us from prison right now? Or somebody
in prison, maybe he's in Houston.
Yeah.
Is he in prison? And this is his opinion from prison,
or maybe
because he's got a phone.
Maybe he's been in prison before. Like, hey man,
or in prison. Oh, maybe he was talking like when you're in prison.
Yeah,
you don't tell people you're from Houston, but because then there might be a gang element to it though too. I don't know about how it all works.
You're
probably like, I don't know. That's just all I know is that if I ever go to prison, I just want to be really careful about like how I don't want to accidentally. You know, make it look like I'm somebody who should be shot.
That's
for no good reason.
That's exactly. I think that's exactly what the texter is saying. Like in prison, you better not say you're from the outs.
Say you're from Houston if you're from Sealy.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Maybe so.
I always wondered. I wondered like in when they were going to try to make it a felony to put your flag on the Ohio State logo. After the debacle up there after the flag.
There was literally a politician that wanted to do that.
And I did think like a felony. Like what kind of street cred would you get for showing up in the pen and when somebody asks you what your crime was, like I planted a flag on the Buckeye and then I realized, you'd be in the state of Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah.
You so know. That's like worse than a felony. You might get really rolled up pretty hard.
You'd have
you
a new boyfriend. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure. Yeah, that guy.
And what man would have you? Not if he was an Ohio State Buckeye fan. He's like, no, I'm not going to have that treacherous whore.
I don't know.
You wouldn't even be the, maybe you want a boyfriend in prison, but like they're looking at you as the guy that planted the flag on the Buckeye.
Maybe. I don't know. Is selectivity a big thing in prison? Is choosiness a big thing there?
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm asking. Yeah.
Human's going to human. Yeah.
We've got so many different groups texting us right now. Hey, if you've been in prison, tell us how selective you were when choosing out who you were. Yeah, okay. Payne and Pendergast with you. Happy New Year, everybody. If you're up with us, we appreciate you. Check in. 713-572-4610 is the number to get in. The newest Houston Texan, Deontay Johnson. How much do we expect to see from him? We heard from D'Amico and Nick Caserio, and I think Nick Caserio confirmed something that we all thought when he talked about the Deontay Johnson acquisition. We'll hear from the Texans head coach and GM coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln at Katy Freeway. 1 mile west of the Beltway, exit Kirkwood, under the giant American flag.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Seth, you got a look on your face. What's going on?
I was thinking, you know, as in our undying and never-ending quest to be the best in the world.
Yeah.
Which we're not exactly sure how you judge that or anything on a local sports radio show, but to be the best in the world on our local sports radio show, I was watching yet another documentary about Bob Dylan last night, and because he's fascinating, but I think the biggest thing that jumps out to me is that he, despite having so much commercial success, he genuinely kind of just followed his own path into what he wanted to do next, even though at times, like when he started, when he went electric, he basically lost his entire audience. Like he was getting booed by gentle hippies on an entire tour because he was playing electric rock music and they didn't like it. So these gentle hippies were booing the hell out of him, calling him Judas, all this stuff. But like that's where he wanted to move musically.
Yeah.
And then he went in and then he started and then he went more into like blues and gospel almost.
Yeah.
Like he went or in country and like he was just going to do what he was going to do. But it was always unique. And I tell you, I don't know how to apply that to our show in a sports radio context. I don't know. It's not quite as much like room for creative improv. I'm not sure.
Like we should just start talking about cooking or politics.
Like don't change our genre completely.
Yeah, that's
that's true.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean he's just changing
he kind of went
type
from
music.
Folk to rock, then more into like almost blues country.
Yeah. We should really do that and see how long it takes management to come. We'll put a lock on the studio and see how long it takes management to come rip the door open.
That's like it's a good strategy for a social media person. If you're a podcaster or something, you might be like, you know what? Not anymore. I'm done with sports. Clay Travis has kind of done that. He transitioned into politics over sport, like in a big way. Other guys, so did what's his name? Olbermann, right? He did it.
Yes.
He transitioned from into politics and then back to sports.
Yep.
So, I don't think that's what I want to do. I want to be the best in the world is a sports/talk format.
Yes. Yes.
I think there are elements where we've kind of evolved into being, since it's 2025 and we can include the listeners in this conversation a little bit, or a lot bit actually. Like we've transitioned, into the guy talk from the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. That was the big thing. It was almost like a lot of sports shows were like 25% sports, 75%. Are you a boob guy or a butt guy?
We've
moved really far away from the boobs and butts.
Yes.
And I would say we're all like almost exclusively sports with like a little sprinkle, 2 or 3 minutes per segment every now and then on lifestyle stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Would we get booed at our appearances if all of a sudden we started going like 50-50 sports/lifestyle
stuff? Talking about our clothes. You know, just started talking about our drip and things like that. Yeah.
Feels like it's not swarm enough.
Right.
Maybe we'd get booed, but in doing so, we would end up with a larger audience of people that wanted us for our rock music / boob takes.
I'm going to tell you right now like what Bob Dylan sounds like. I've watched none of these documentaries about Bob Dylan that you've watched, and I've not seen the movie that's out about Bob Dylan with actors in it.
I haven't seen that yet either.
I've heard it's really good, and I'll probably go see it. But Bob Dylan sounds like one of those musicians that annoys the hell out of me when I go to see their music and they decide to play their whole new album that I don't give a crap about. Like that's annoying to me.
Well, he's still touring constantly and performing.
Is it really?
And he's very open about like, you know, I can't write songs the way I used to. It's just not in me anymore, but he still writes songs and he's still putting out content. He just loves going out and performing.
Does he play all his new stuff or does he play the old stuff?
I'm guessing he mixes it up a little bit,
okay.
But a lot of the people that probably go to watch him now are also just their lifelong Bob Dylan fans that just appreciate seeing it. They want to hear.
Sure. Yeah.
They might want to hear his new stuff.
You don't even
kinda
care.
Like a deadhead. Is going to want a much different playlist than when you or I show up to a Dead concert.
Yeah, not playing Touch of Grey. What the hell?
Play all of your 3.5 minute long pop songs, damn it.
Yeah.
Why are you playing non-pop songs?
D'Amico Ryan's, his coach's show. Good watch if you can find it, if you can listen to it here on Sports Radio 610. John Harris and Mark Vandermeer do a great job with the Texans head coach. Here's D'Amico Ryan's this week on newcomer Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, no, it's late in the season. Our last game, we add a new guy to our roster, but I told the guys, throw the kitchen sink in and let's see what he can absorb, see what he can handle, and go out here versus Tennessee and let's see what he can do. We know he's a talented player. He's proven that at multiple stops. It's just a matter of him just coming in and, man, how much can he pick up and how can he come out and help us? Yep. You know, we'll see that this game, yep, try to give him some opportunities there. And as I mentioned, Deontay, man, it's a fresh start with me. Yep. Every guy that I get is fresh start. I really don't care what happened in the past. Like, it's about the present, right, and how do you attack it and how can you come and help our football team. Yep.
All right. What do you think the best case scenario is with Deontay Johnson here?
I think, honestly, that he's out there all the time, and that because he's a speed threat and because there's a little bit of an X factor element to him, there's no tendencies on him, mm-hmm, that you just go ahead and with Deontay Johnson, everything he wanted in Baltimore, that he would be more of a focal point and everything, he gets it. And maybe it lasts 2 weeks. Maybe it lasts three. I'm skeptical that it'll last four. Right. But he would be a part of it. If it lasts 4 weeks,
he might be back.
I'm thinking it's almost in this. To me, it's almost, yeah, it's almost a requirement that he's productive. Like that, or at the very least, he's out there and he's getting targets because he's loosening things up for Nico Collins and everything else. This is a weird thing to say that on the surface of it, it sounds stupid as hell. But in some ways, I look at Deontay Johnson as a critical X factor in whether or not the Texans can subsist.
Bingo. If you and I started making a list of Texans based on indispensability, C.J. Stroud is obviously, I don't care what kind of year C.J.'s having, he's number one because he's the quarterback. And then it's Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson, Nico Collins. It's Derek Stingley Jr., all those things, Lassiter because of the lack of depth. I don't know that you get past like 10 or 12 and not put Deontay Johnson's name just because of the element that he brings to the team.
If you look at the way the Texans' offense was operating up until Tank Dell's injury in the Chiefs game,
yes,
including the touchdown that he scored as he was getting injured,
yes,
there was so much of that game offensively that looked like, yes, oh, this is the way it should look. Oh, wow. You're seeing zone coverage, so Tank can slice people up underneath. Or, oh, look at, he's in man coverage. He's going to beat his guy. And CJ had enough time to get the ball to those guys. Or when he didn't have time, he was throwing it underneath. That's the way it's supposed to look. Yeah. And then it was gone. Like, we had 2.5 quarters, or what was it, 2.75 quarters of that version of offensive football, and maybe they could have built on that, and then you lose Tank Dell's speed, and you got what we got last week was, man, that is a plodding group out there. Like, they might as well be wearing barn boots. There's no speed. The timing and the spacing on routes was off. Everything was too slow. It reminded me of when Tom Brady was playing in the flu game at NRG Stadium, where they caught him on the sideline saying, we need to be faster.
Yes.
But those guys at that time couldn't get faster, and the Texans receiving core and tight end group, like, they can't get faster.
No.
They are who they are.
No, but they got faster with Deontay Johnson in the building, to your point. And here was Nick Caserio. I think Nick alludes to something here that I think probably confirms what a lot of us thought about maybe some of the thought process behind claiming Deontay Johnson off waivers.
Yeah, our philosophy is always just look to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves. You don't really know when that's going to happen, right, whether it's week 8, week 12, week 16. So we look at the waiver wire every day. Pro scouting staff does a great job, and then we have discussions about it. We talk about it as a staff. Ultimately, you make a decision, well, does this make sense or not?
Right.
I think the situation with Tank maybe, you know, said, hey, you missed an opportunity for us to bring in a good football player. There's a lot of experience. So Deontay's been a productive player in this league for a number of years, a skilled player, even going back to his Toledo days. I mean, this is a player, you know, I actually had the opportunity to work him out, spend the day on campus with him when he was coming out. I think it was near him and Woodside, I think they came out or around the same time. So he's got a good skill set. He's athletic. He's fast. He's got good quickness. He's been productive. So when you get a player this late, obviously you can't teach him everything.
Right.
You just want to try to give him some small doses so he can go out there and actually practice. And then if he has an opportunity to play, go out there and perform at a high level.
All right, so two things interesting to me there. One is Nick talking about you know, he can't absorb everything, so you give him some specific things. Right after we heard D'Amico Ryan say, throw the kitchen sink at him. So that's interesting to me. But I think Nick confirms it there. Like, if Tank Dell were healthy, they would not have picked up Deontay Johnson off of waivers.
Yeah.
You know, he alluded to the Tank situation there. And part of me says, I don't know, maybe you should. Even if Tank were healthy, that might not have been a bad idea to pick him up, considering you came into the season thinking it was going to be Nico, Tank, and Diggs. Uh-huh. And the offense was still the first half and change against Kansas City, notwithstanding, this was still an offense that looked like it could have used more weapons. It's irrelevant now, but clearly the Tank Dell injury was the impetus for them putting a claim in on Johnson.
Well, Sean, I'll credit you with early on saying, look, as much as people were hung up on, hey, could they have 3,000-yard receivers and everything, you were steadfastly making the point that, hey, Stephon Diggs is 31 years old. Nico Collins has an injury history. Tank Dell has like an injury history and a brief career, but he's tiny. That there's a very good possibility that in the majority of games, you're only going to have two of those guys.
Yeah.
So it's as much about depth. Even though you got three starter caliber players, you almost look at it that way. And that's how it played out, but almost too much.
To the extreme, yeah.
Yeah. Like yeah. they had depth in the form of multiple capable starters.
Mm-hmm.
It was an embarrassment of riches, and now that's gone. It's evaporated.
Yep. So that'll be easily one of the biggest things to watch in this game on Sunday is the incorporation of Deontay Johnson into things.
Real quick summation on one of the comments we got on YouTube from God's Time about like if we alienated our whole audience by switching things up. He said, that's not your genre, all created. It's your genre. I think what he means is, and then he says, all created by one specific group. I think he's talking about sports radio listeners. Right. What I would say is it's there's different genres of sports radio, and there's a spectrum of like some shows are 100% sports, and then there's other shows like the Dan Le Batard show, a couple of shows up in New England that are incredibly successful. They might be like 25% sports,
yes,
and then 75%. Really, the genre of radio that we're in, if you break down to the business side of things, is really it's men 25 to 54.
Yep.
Like, that's our core demographic that advertisers care about and everything else like that. So it's like, okay, which segment of the men 25 to 54 who want to listen to talk radio that, you know, like, that's not political or newsy that's the genre.
Yep.
It's men 25 to 54 with stuff that doesn't actually matter.
That's right.
It's anything. It's not politics. Or news or anything like that. It's all the stuff that's genuinely entertainment.
Yes. But we're going to get just as worked up and angry about it if we have to, okay?
That's the fun of it all.
If we have to,
yeah. Well, it's just like playing a sport itself. Yeah. It's all a construct.
Yes.
It's all fake. It's
manufactured.
You know, and yet you latch onto it.
It works.
And like when you're playing the sport, it's war. You know, that's what we humans do. We have a need to go out and simulate things.
That's right. So let's get in the next segment emotional about CJ Stroud's sophomore slump. I like this piece that Jonathan Alexander did. Does this make you feel better or worse about the year that CJ Stroud is having right now? We will dig into this coming up next.